Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are going deep into the world of eco-societalism.
Eco-societalism.
Yeah, you sent us some really interesting sources in French.
Right.
So clearly you're ready to explore some alternative economic and political models.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think this is going to be a fascinating conversation.
Yeah.
So we're going to try to unpack what is eco-societalism? How does it challenge the systems that we live in?
Right.
And what solutions does it actually propose?
It's a big one.
Yeah, it is a big
It's
one.
going to be a deep dive for sure.
It is. And one of the first things that struck me from reading through these sources
Yeah.
is this almost like paradoxical idea
Uh-huh.
about how we measure value in our current system.
No, okay.
They point out that events like natural disasters, oil spills, even like disease outbreaks,
Right.
while tragic and horrible,
Yeah.
actually boost GDP.
Yeah, it's counterintuitive, isn't it?
It is. It's kind of like
Well, when you think about it, all that economic activity that kicks in after a catastrophe like reconstruction, cleanup, medical care,
Right.
all of that spending gets tallied up as a positive contribution to the economy.
It's almost like the system rewards destruction in a way,
Yeah.
which feels inherently wrong, but then it gets even weirder because acts of selflessness and community support, like volunteer work, actually decrease GDP.
Right, because unpaid labor doesn't fit into
It doesn't fit
that
there.
model.
It's outside of the system.
Exactly.
So we have this realization that our current economic indicators
Yeah.
don't really capture.
Yeah, they miss a lot.
They miss a lot. They miss the true value of things that actually really contribute to well-being.
Totally.
So if GDP is not a reliable measure,
Right.
what does eco-societalism propose as an alternative?
Well, the sources argue for a shift in focus from purely economic indicators to something they call societal wealth.
Okay.
And this encompasses things like environmental health, social justice, and the well-being of
They have
communities.
a much
It
broader,
is.
more holistic view
Absolutely.
of what constitutes a thriving society.
Yeah.
But how do we actually transition from a system that's fixated on GDP growth
Yeah.
to one that prioritizes this broader concept of societal wealth?
Right.
That's where things get really interesting.
That's where eco-societalism offers some truly radical solutions.
Okay, so before we get into those solutions, let's define what we're dealing with here.
Okay.
One of the sources gives us a pretty clear definition of eco-societalism.
Okay.
It says, a global citizen movement advocating the establishment of an economic and political system based on human rights and respect for the environment. So
Wow.
it's not just an economic model, it's a whole societal paradigm shift.
It's huge.
Yeah, it's huge, and it's built on some key tenets. For example,
Yeah.
eco-societalism calls for a pretty radical overhaul of our monetary system.
Okay.
It proposes community control of money creation to break free from this cycle of debt-based economies,
Right.
where money is essentially created out of thin air through loans and interest.
Yeah, and it feels especially relevant today
It does.
with so much discussion about debt and financial instability.
But community control of money creation, how would that even work?
Well, imagine a system where money is issued based on the actual needs of the people
Okay.
and the value of the work being done in society.
Okay.
That's the fundamental shift that eco-societalism is aiming for.
It's a huge departure from the way things currently work.
It is.
And speaking of big departures, another core principle of eco-societalism
Okay.
is this idea of managing common resources
Right.
like water and energy for the benefit of all,
Yeah.
especially, considering the needs of future generations,
Of course.
which leads to another key tenet,
Okay.
national dividends.
Okay.
This is where things get really interesting. It's a form of wealth redistribution
Okay.
where everyone gets a share of the collective prosperity. It's almost like a universal basic income, but with a twist, right?
Exactly. The idea is to ensure that everyone benefits from the societal wealth that's generated,
Right.
rather than having it concentrated in the hands of a
A
few.
small group of people.
Exactly. And to make sure that decision-making isn't just happening at the top, eco-societalism emphasizes participatory democracy,
Oh.
giving more power to local and regional communities.
So it's a system that strives for both economic and political transformation.
It is.
It's starting to feel like we're building a whole new world here.
In a way, we are,
Yeah,
but
yeah.
before we get too carried away, we need to understand how this new world would function on a practical level.
Right, let's move beyond the theoretical and get into the nuts and bolts.
Let's do it.
Because one of the most intriguing aspects of eco-societalism is how it reimagines the very concept of work.
I know.
If we're no longer chasing endless economic growth, how do we determine the value of different jobs and activities?
Right.
And how do people get paid?
That's huge.
Those are key questions.
Yeah.
And eco-societalism offers some fascinating answers.
It does.
And this is where it gets really interesting. Are you ready to delve into the world of societal activity remuneration and the societal impact index?
I am.
Hold on tight, because we're about to uncover some truly radical ideas about the future of work, but we'll save that for part two.
We will stay tuned.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We are exploring the world of eco-societalism, and in part one, we laid the groundwork.
Right.
We looked at, you know, its critiques of current systems and the core tenets it proposes.
Yeah.
But now it's time to roll up our sleeves and get into the nitty-gritty.
I love it.
How would eco-societalism actually function in the real world?
That's the question, isn't it? And the sources that you sent, they really go into detail about how all this would work.
Good. Because one of the things that really piqued my curiosity is that how does work and income function?
Yeah.
In a world without traditional profit motives.
Right.
You mentioned something called societal activity remuneration.
Yes.
In part one.
Yeah.
So break that down for us.
Okay. So the idea is that everyone receives a baseline income, a social income, just for being a member of society.
Mm-hmm.
And this covers their basic necessities of life, ensuring everyone has a safety net.
So it's kind of like a universal basic income.
It is.
That's been a hot topic.
Right.
But how does eco-societalism take it a step further?
Okay, well, it's not just about providing that basic safety net. In addition to the social income, individuals receive additional compensation based on the societal impact of their work.
Okay.
It's called activity remuneration.
So no, this is where I need some clarification. How do you measure societal impact of different jobs?
Right.
Isn't that incredibly subjective?
Well, that's where the Societal Impact Index comes in.
Okay.
It's one of the most fascinating and perhaps controversial aspects of eco-societalism.
Yeah.
The sources describe it as a tool for evaluating the contributions of various activities and professions to the overall well-being of society.
I can already imagine the debates this would spark.
I know, right? How could you possibly create an objective index that encompasses everything from healthcare workers to artists to software developers?
Yeah, the authors acknowledge the challenges, but they propose some intriguing criteria for this index.
Like what?
Things like contributing to public health.
Okay.
Preserving the environment.
Okay.
Promoting education and knowledge.
Uh-huh.
Even fostering artistic and cultural expression.
It's a radical shift.
It is.
From our current system where value is often equated with earning potential.
Right.
Regardless of the actual benefit to society.
Totally. So it really flips the script.
Yeah. But even if we could agree on these criteria, who decides how the index is actually calculated?
Yeah.
Who gets to determine what's valuable?
So the sources suggest a multifaceted approach.
Right.
Involving experts from various fields, as well as input from citizens.
Okay.
Through participatory processes.
It sounds very complex.
Yeah, it would be a complex process. But the goal is to create a system that's transparent, accountable, and reflects the values of the community as a whole. Okay, let's assume for the sake of argument that we can create this index.
Okay.
How does it actually translate into income for individuals?
Okay, sure. Let's look at some concrete examples. Imagine a healthcare worker.
Okay.
Someone who's directly contributing to the well-being of others. Their work would likely be ranked highly on the Societal Impact Index.
Why?
Resulting in significant activity remuneration on top of their social income.
So their income wouldn't be determined by the market forces of supply and demand.
Exactly.
But by the value their work brings to society.
It's a complete inversion of how we typically think about compensation.
I like it. Okay. Consider an artist, someone who might not be directly involved in essential services.
Right.
But whose work enriches our culture and inspires creativity.
Absolutely.
Their contribution might be less quantifiable.
Right.
But it would still be recognized.
Yes.
And compensated through the Societal Impact Index.
Exactly.
It's fascinating to think about how this system could potentially elevate professions that are currently undervalued, even though they play a vital role in our society.
Totally. And that's one of the key aims of eco-societalism, is to redefine what constitutes valuable work.
Okay.
And create a system that rewards contributions that truly benefit society as a whole.
So we have this system where everyone has a basic income and receives additional compensation based on the societal impact of their work.
Hmm.
But how is this all funded? Where does the money come from?
Remember that single tax on consumption we talked about in part one, the society tax?
Yeah.
That's the engine that drives this whole system.
Right. But I have to admit, I'm still a bit baffled by this idea of destroying money to control inflation. Can you explain that?
Sure. It might seem counterintuitive, but it's actually quite logical. Remember, in a debt-based economy, money is created through loans, which inherently create an obligation to repay with interest. This leads to a constant pressure to grow the economy, often at the expense of the environment and social well-being.
Like we're on this treadmill, constantly having to run faster just to stay in the same place.
Exactly. Eco-societalism proposes a different approach. Money is created by a central institution, but not through debt. It's issued based on the social income and activity remuneration that's distributed to the population.
So the money supply is directly tied to the needs of the people.
Right.
And the value of the work being done.
Exactly.
Rather than being driven by debt and interest.
Precisely. And here's where the societax comes in. As people consume goods and services, the money they spend is collected through this tax and then destroyed.
Wait, destroyed, literally deleted from the system?
Yes. In a sense, it's a way to prevent the accumulation of wealth and control inflation.
Instead of money constantly being created through loans and accumulating in the hands of a few, it's being created to meet the needs of society and then removed from circulation as it's spent. It's like a controlled burn in a forest preventing a wildfire.
That's a great analogy. It's about maintaining a balance, ensuring that money is circulating in a way that benefits society as a whole rather than driving inequality and unsustainable growth.
It's a radical concept, but it's starting to make sense. But who actually manages this whole system? Is it all centralized, or is there some element of local control?
That's a crucial point. While there would be a central institution responsible for issuing money and overseeing the overall system, the sources emphasize the importance of decentralization and community control.
So it's not just a top-down approach.
Not at all. Local and regional communities would have a significant say in how money is allocated and used within their areas, ensuring that the system is responsive to local needs and priorities.
Okay. This is starting to come together, but I'm curious, how would businesses operate in this system without traditional profit motives? What incentivizes them to produce goods and services efficiently and innovate?
That's a great question, and it brings us to another key distinction of eco-societalism, the concept of businesses as cooperatives focused on meeting societal needs rather than maximizing profits. We'll explore that further in part three, so be sure to stay tuned for that.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Yeah, this whole exploration of eco-societalism has been really mind-bending.
It is.
You know, we've talked about redefining wealth, revolutionizing the monetary system, reshaping how we think about work.
Right.
But, you know, there's one big question that's been swirling in my mind.
Yeah.
And I'm sure our listeners are grappling with it, too.
Uh-huh.
Does a system like this, with its emphasis on collective well-being and societal impact, leave any room for individual freedom?
That's the classic tension, isn't it? The individual versus the collective.
Right.
And it's something that the authors of these sources address head on.
Okay.
They argue that true freedom doesn't come from the relentless pursuit of individual wealth or material possessions.
Okay.
Instead, it comes from having security and resources to pursue a meaningful life, to develop your talents and contribute to society in ways that are personally fulfilling.
So it's about shifting the definition of freedom away from pure economic autonomy. Mm-hmm. To something more holistic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Imagine a world where everyone has access to basic necessities like food, shelter, healthcare, and education.
Okay.
Not as handouts, but as a fundamental right.
Right.
They argue that this foundation of security would actually free people to pursue their passions, take risks, explore their full potential.
Yeah.
Without that constant fear of falling through the cracks.
It's a fascinating idea.
It is.
By guaranteeing everyone that basic level of well-being, you create a society where people are empowered to make choices.
Right.
Based on something other than pure economic necessity.
It changes the game.
Yeah, but wouldn't this lead to a lack of motivation?
Right.
You know, if everyone is guaranteed a basic income, wouldn't people just stop working altogether?
That's a common critique, and it's one the sources anticipate.
Okay.
They argue that human beings are inherently driven to create, contribute, and find meaning in their lives.
Okay.
It's not just about survival, it's about thriving. Mm-hmm. And in an eco-societal system, work wouldn't just be about earning a living, it would be about making a difference, pursuing your passions, and contributing to the collective good.
Okay, well, let's get practical here.
Mm-hmm.
If businesses aren't driven by profit, what incentivizes them to produce goods and services efficiently
and
innovate?
Right. Remember how we talked about businesses operating more like cooperatives in part two?
Yeah.
That's key.
Okay.
In this system, businesses wouldn't be beholden to shareholders or driven by the need to maximize profits.
Yeah.
Their primary focus would be on meeting the needs of the community in a sustainable and responsible way.
So instead of being driven by the bottom line,
yeah,
they'd be guided by a different set of values focused on social and environmental well-being.
Exactly.
But they would still need to be efficient and innovative to thrive.
Of course.
Okay.
But their success wouldn't be measured solely in terms of financial gain. It would be about their contribution to the overall health of the community and the environment.
I'm trying to wrap my head around how this would actually work on a practical level.
Okay.
Let's say, you know, I'm an entrepreneur with a great idea for a new product.
Okay.
How would I get funding to get my business off the ground?
Okay, so instead of seeking venture capital or taking out loans, you would present your idea to a community-based investment fund. They would evaluate your proposal based on its potential societal benefit, its environmental impact, and its alignment with the values outlined in that societal impact index.
So it's like a dragon's den.
Yeah.
But instead of pitching to investors looking for a financial return, you're pitching to a group that's evaluating your idea based on its contribution to the common good.
That's a great way to put it. And if your idea is deemed worthy, you receive funding and support to develop your business.
But wouldn't that lead to a lot of bureaucracy and stifle innovation?
The authors acknowledge the potential for bureaucratic hurdles, but they emphasize the importance of streamlined processes and transparent decision-making at the community level.
Okay.
By empowering local communities to make decisions about investment and resource allocation, you create a more agile and responsive system.
We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive into eco-societalism.
Yeah.
It's a complex system with a lot of moving parts.
It is.
And it's certainly not without its challenges and potential pitfalls.
Right.
But, you know, one thing is clear. It offers a radical reimagining of how our society could function, prioritizing human well-being, environmental sustainability, and a more equitable distribution of resources.
It really pushes us to rethink some fundamental assumptions.
Yeah, it challenges us to rethink our assumptions about wealth, work, and progress, and to consider the possibility of a world where individual freedom is not at odds with collective well-being, but rather enhanced by it.
Yeah, I like that.
So as we wrap up this deep dive,
yeah,
you know, we want to leave you, our listeners, with a question to ponder.
Yeah.
What aspects of eco-societalism resonate with you? What critiques or concerns do you have?
We encourage you to continue exploring these ideas and consider how they might shape the future we're building together. Thanks for joining us.